You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
We're back. We took a little siesta break there.
I don't think you can call that a siesta at all.
You might have had a siesta. I freaking worked like 2 weeks straight.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we were both kind of in that same boat.
But we couldn't let Halloween pass without dropping y'all a new episode. And, you know, our last Halloween we talked about slasher films and such, so this Halloween, we're going to talk about spooky movies, ghosts, goblins, and hauntings.
It's pretty much all the things that go bump in the night.
Speaking of bumping,
did you see Goosebumps? Like the
I saw the trailer for it, but I'm not. I think it just started. I haven't checked it out.
That was like the number one grossing movie over the weekend.
Damn, there's some like early nerd news for you.
Yeah, just threw that in there.
So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So we are smoking the La Palina Red Label. This is an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, Ecuadorian binder, and Nicaraguan and Dominican filler. And, you know, I got to say, man, it's got a rich, creamy smoke to it. It's a little bit on the mild side right now, but it could be because I'm just into the first third of the cigar, too.
Yeah, It starts off very mild, and from what I hear, it doesn't get above a medium. But even though it's kind of low in strength, it's definitely got like a lot of body and flavor.
Oh yeah, no, I'm definitely picking up, you know, a little bit of a woody, but there's a subtle spice, and I mean it's actually quite creamy and complex for it to be a milder smoke. I mean,
an excellent construction too. We're smoking the Gordo size, which is 6x60, and I've got a good solid inch of ash, and it's not even anywhere near dropping off yet. It's holding together well as it smokes.
That's what happens in proper humidification, my friend, when we're not smoking cigars in 95 degree heat.
You know, it's cooled off a little bit.
Yeah, I know.
I may actually have to go check the humidity levels in my humidors. They've been in the basement. It's so hot and humid, I haven't had to add any water. Now that it's cooling off a little, I may have to go top off the humidors.
I had to replace the batteries in my hygrometer and, you know, just went ahead and did the routine maintenance. And I like to season my humidors, you know, once a year or so. So I did that the other day. And, you know, just a little bit of routine maintenance goes a long way, folks.
Oh, yeah. And one little piece of housekeeping. When I was listening back to last week's episode, we mentioned the new MC Lars album was coming out. I said October 6th. That was a mistake. It's actually November 6th. So by the time this episode comes out, you know, you got another week or so to go. But since we went to the Joyful Smiles tour after our last recording, we actually picked up an early copy of it. So we will be dropping a song from that album later on in the episode, so stay tuned for that, and we'll tell you all about the show when we get to nerd news, so stay tuned, folks. We're about to get spooky.
The house looks just like the one next to it, and the one next to that, and the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so unlucky.
With their three children. And something more.
Hello? They're here.
Sweetie, remember last night? Do you remember when you woke up and you said you were here?
Uh-huh.
Well, who did you mean? Who's here?
TV people.
Something's funny going on here next door. Something,
we were wondering if maybe you had experienced any disturbances lately.
What kind of disturbances?
And we're back. Welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. Halloween edition.
pretty sweet intro there, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah, this time last year, we talked about slasher films and our favorite famous slashers. So this year, we're going to do something a little different, and we're going to talk about one of the other big horror movie genres, ghost movies.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I don't think you can talk about this topic without, you know, talking about one of the, you know, franchises that set the stage in Paranormal Activity, but Poltergeist.
Yeah, I'll tell you this one thing before we, you know, dive too deep in it. The genre of ghost horror movie, to me, always creeped me out way more than the slasher film genre. I mean, because with Freddy, Jason, or any other, you know, freaking Michael Myers, Leatherface, whatever, all, I feel that if a thing attacked, there's always a way to defend yourself. I mean, Jason's immortal, but you blow his kneecaps out with a 12-gauge, it's just going to slow him down a little bit. But with ghosts, there's never really any way to defeat them, you know, short of the, you know, there's always like some kind of weird magical element that they throw in the movies. But yeah, it's something that you can't see and then you can't really fight against.
Well, so I mean, it's one of those things too that, you know, folks by nature are very skeptical. So, you know, if you start explaining to somebody outside of, you know, the paranormal community, weird things that's going on inside your house, you know, people are like, all right, you're just loony and need to be locked up in an asylum somewhere. So, I mean, that's the other thing is, you know, how do you really reach out for help in that situation?
Yeah,
like,
right.
I mean,
just everyone's gonna
you
assume
know,
you're crazy.
You don't really just go to your neighbors and be like, so, yeah, my chairs are stacking themselves in weird patterns, and I know I'm the guy that, you know, talked you into buying a house in this development and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, we see that in the, you know, talking about the original 1982 Poltergeist. At one point, they go to talk to their neighbor to see if anyone else is experiencing anything weird, and they just look like they're stoned out of there because they're giggling and they're just like, this is so fucking ridiculous. How do we explain this to somebody? And the neighbors are just like, you gotta cut back on the weed.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the other thing that comes up in that conversation is, all right, our daughter's missing. We go to the cops with this crazy ass story, like, we're automatically suspect number one and number two.
Yeah, I mean, if and they talk about a little bit of that in the, they never flat out say it in the original, but in the remake, they're like, he's like, we can't go to the cops because they're going to think we've killed her and buried her somewhere. You know, we got to find like, you know, somebody that knows a little bit about what's actually going on because there's no way we can explain this and people will believe us. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing too with ghost movies that kind of make them scarier is if you believe in ghosts, you know, Jason's like, you pretty much can know Jason's not going to show up at your house, but if you believe in ghosts, you know, this is something that could actually happen, a horror movie that could happen in real life. You could actually be affected by this stuff, or probably not to the, you know, level that we see in the movies, but it's something that's at least, if not probable, it's plausible.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, and then talking with investigation groups and things of that nature, I mean, you know, you always want to go into everything with a skeptic's mindset. But, you know, at the same time, there's things out there that can't be explained. So can you definitively say it's a ghost? Maybe not. But you can definitely say that, you know, something paranormal has occurred.
And like we were talking about, probably the most well-known ghost movie, the original Poltergeist, starring, for all you other kids, Coach Craig T. Nelson.
Yes. You know, and what it's kind of funny, you know, this film is co-written and produced by Steven Spielberg, but Spielberg had a clause that he couldn't technically direct another movie while, you know, in the process of making E.T., the extraterrestrial. So Toby Hooper is credited with directing,
and the director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yep. And that's, you know, people loved his work then. So like, oh, you know, Toby, come do this for
us. It's weird too, knowing that he directed, cause you know, most stuff you see are like the straight up slasher movies and him doing a paranormal creepy movie where technically no one really dies in this movie. So that's kind of a departure for, it doesn't look like a Toby Hooper movie.
Yeah, and I mean, that was the thing, you know, about Toby Hooper's, you know, style is, You know, even in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre films, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of blood, gore, and stuff of that nature. I mean, probably one of the most goriest scenes is where the hitchhiker, you know, slices his hand open and stuff of that nature. But, you know, in the Poltergeist film, you know, I think about the goriest scene for me is the guy standing over the sink when he starts to peel his own face off.
When because, you know, if you haven't seen it, the story is this family who lives in a subdivision. Craig T. Nelson is the father, and he's also a salesman for the developer. So he's the one who goes out and sells all these houses in the subdivision. Well, it turns out, unbeknownst to him, the subdivision was built on a cemetery, and they didn't move the bodies. They just moved the headstones. So as he's building a pool, he kind of stirs up something, and all of a sudden his house gets possessed, and his daughter gets sucked into the ghost realm. And like I said, it's...
Yeah, I mean, the ghosts are trying to attach themselves to the daughter being, you know, the, you know, purest, I guess having the purest life and energy.
They don't know to go into the light, and kind of her light is... there's some kind of evil monster in there, too, that's using her to kind of capture all these souls. But... One of the cool things about the movie is, especially the original, when they first start seeing the paranormal activity, they kind of think it's cool. I mean, like, the mom's like a little bit of a hippie. She's like when she first, it's cool because they're eating breakfast and there's just little, like, subtle things. Like, their spoons are all of a sudden bent to, like, how the fuck did this happen? And then the daughter is talking to the static in the TV, which
dude, little going kids back and static in the TV.
Going
that's
back
creepy.
And watching
you
this
kids
too.
Today with digital, you know, cable television won't know this, but
yeah, there used to be a time at a certain time of night. Usually it was like 1-2 in the morning because I remember seeing it like after Johnny Carson like went off. The TV would just go to they would play the national anthem and then the Steve TV would go to static until the morning broadcast.
That
started.
Or you would have a hard wind that would blow the antenna on top of your house the wrong direction.
So I'm like, how many kids, if they go back and watch this, will even understand what is occurring in those scenes?
Yeah, I mean, now what do you get? You get a solid black screen, if anything. Or,
yeah, I mean, but now there's really 24-hour programming. You don't get static unless your cable goes out or there's that rain on your satellite. And even then, it just goes to a black screen and says no signal available. You know, back then, we actually got the white noise and creepy little girls talking to the something in the TV.
Which is weird, because if you stared at that shit long enough, like, I can remember me and some of my friends, like, under the right conditions and mindsets, you stare at the static, and all of a sudden, you start seeing shit, like, little shapes and...
Not to get off topic too much, but there was a more recent horror movie several years ago called White Noise. Did you ever see that? I think it was, like, with Michael Keaton. And, like, they're pretty much looking at the static in, like, radio and TVs, trying to, like, his family, his wife dies in a car accident or something, and he's trying to contact her through the static in these signals, and it's a weird-ass movie.
I don't think I saw that, but, I mean, I can definitely see where you're going with that premise.
And also, if anybody's heard the, they're here, I mean, this is where it came from. And when
who's
ghosts,
here, honey?
The TV people,
and not DirecTV.
Yeah, but yeah, when they first start seeing the paranormal stuff, they just like they're like, oh, it's cool because like at one point the mom turns around because she blamed the kids for moving the chairs, and all of a sudden she turns around and the chairs are all stacked up on the TV. Or, I mean, on the table in like a weird configuration. So when the dad, instead of being completely, because like, if that happened in my house, like, we're out the fucking door.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's like,
we're
oh,
locked,
this is
locked,
awesome.
Ready to roll. Yeah, I mean, she's like, got chalk lines and circles drawn out. And
she's like, look, you leave something here and it slides all the way over to that part. And she even puts the kid in it, puts like a football helmet on her and slides her across the living room.
Kid's like, that hurt, mommy.
It's like, oh, we gotta put more wax on the
linoleum, yeah.
Yeah, so they're all like, when it first happens, they're all like, oh, this is cool. And then it just starts... And then the house, or the tree, tries to eat the kid, and
which is funny because you know we did
the girl
have
gets
the,
sucked into the closet.
Well, you know, going back to the whole tree scene, I mean, Sam Raimi has a hand in this film. Also had a hand in, you know, I think the other.
Did
epic.
He ever? I know he had one in the remake, but I didn't know he was involved in the original.
I don't know. I may be confusing the two, but yeah, I saw, you know.
The remake was definitely done by Sam.
Yeah, because I saw that, and I was like, that's awesome. Tree and tree.
And I gotta say, compared to the remake, the tree scene in the original is just way creepier. I mean, the limbs, I mean, the tree looks nasty to begin with, but when the limbs come through the door, they look like almost like skeleton hands. And the tree actually starts trying to like eat the kid.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting sucked into the tree. You know, the dad has to climb up the tree and like literally pull him out of it. And that and creepy ass clown dolls.
Yeah, dude, I don't know what it is, man. I don't know. I think it's like, kind of like you cleaning out the attic, and I think you found one of my ex-girlfriends, like a
yeah, the freaking porcelain dolls, yeah, man.
Like
I almost shot that thing because it rolled out of the storage unit, it, like it fell and over, and it was like up against the door. So as soon as I open the door, it falls out, and I cleared leather. I almost shot that thing.
Turns out it was just a squirrel. Should have set some traps.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They recently remade it. With Sam Rockwell playing the dad, and I don't know, how did you think the two compared?
You know, there were definitely some things that I think the 1980, the original version, really brought to the table and set the premise. Like when I was watching the updated version, like it was cool. Yeah, they're using IMAX and tablets and drones and such, so the technology was certainly there. But a lot of the things that, would have creeped me out the most are, the more oh shit moments. I went into the 2015 film and, there for like the first 35, 40 minutes, I'm like, all they did is remade this film exactly to a T, and then some subtle differences started to emerge. I think the originals, I think they held more ground and had, more of those jumpy moments, yeah. More so than the original.
And like,
or I'm sorry, more than the updated one.
When I watched this, I watched the new one first, and then afterward, I went back and watched the original second just to see how it compared. And I gotta say, I like the original way better because to me, the new one, like the original, there was a little bit more character development. It seemed like it was slow later in the movie before, like, the really bad shit kicks off.
Well, I mean,
but for the new one, it's like day one. They're moving into the house, and the little girl is already talking to the closet that won't open.
Yeah.
And that was just,
I mean,
yeah,
the timeline
shit.
Was sped up so much more in the new one. But, I mean, I think growing up in the 80s, I could see myself in that situation as a kid. I mean, I had those same Star yeah. Wars sheets on my bed for crying out loud. Like the blue sheets with C-3PO and everything on
yeah,
there.
You can tell it's a Spielberg thing because there's so much Star Wars stuff. There's even one part later on where the dad's like, I love you, and the mom's like, I know, like straight up Han and Leia shit. But that too, and in the new one, like I said, it jumps into the scary stuff like right off the bat. Literally, they move into the house and the girl disappears like the very next night. I mean, there's like the first one had, I would say at least 30 minutes of character building before the creepy shit started happening. So you cared more about the family when the bad stuff did happen.
And I'm wondering too that,
and I really didn't have that with the new family. That and Sam Rockwell too as the dad. I mean, he's a good actor, but he's played an asshole or a villain in like every single movie.
So it's weird trying to see him as
trying to care about him because like he's usually a dick.
Which, and this may just be a growing up in the South thing, but the changing of the little girl's name from Carol Ann in the original to Maddie in the second one, like that just didn't have the same effect,
as, yeah, when they're running around like Carol Ann, I mean, I don't know for some, yeah, some reason, but that girl was creepy as shit, too. Just her talking to the closet, and then all the stuff like sticking, like the kids start seeing all the stuff where the parents do, like stuff sticking to the walls and stuff. And then when they kind of recreated, instead of the chairs stacking themselves, this time it was the kids' comic book collection. He's like walking down the hall with like a big box of comics, and this ball rolls out of nowhere. And he's like, Maddie, is that you? And goes into her room, and there's like nobody there. And he drops the ball, and the ball like starts rolling around the room by itself. And he's like, it starts to get freaked out. He turns around to run away, and there's this, the comic books of like, stack themselves up like a house of cards. Where
yeah.
You can't get out of the room.
That was interesting. And then, kind of alluding back to, some of the Freddy Krueger special effects, I think. The one where the mom, like you see the ghost like trying to pull on her, top and underwear and stuff. And then she just gets sucked to the wall, up to the ceiling and
yeah.
across the ceiling. Like,
That's the thing, when the girl gets taken in the first movie, it's way more violent. I mean, literally that closet opens up and it sucks everything in the room into the closet before, like...
While there's a tornado going on outside.
And the other kids in the tree. But in the new one, it's just like, you know, she kind of follows a doll into the closet and this hand comes out and grabs her. It just wasn't as spectacular as the original.
I mean, I think that's one of the things that made Poltergeist... I don't know, for me... Scary creatures or, you know, your typical slasher characters, those folks really aren't scary to me. But something about dolls and creepy-ass kids, man, like, you put that combination together, and it just changed the dynamics of the film for me altogether for some reason.
And the scene that cracks me up, they do it in the new one, and they did it in the original, when the scientist first, because that's like, all right, we're going to go find a paranormal psychologist, because... Yeah, we don't know what the fuck
to
do.
Had to basically
go
to the local college and
So when they first come, and these people are used to, like, you know, experiencing regular ghost stuff. Yeah, you know, like one of the cameramen is like, "Yeah, I recorded this kid's car drive all over this room, and you know, but it took 7 hours to record this. It was
hours to go 10 feet.
It was so slow that you couldn't take it with a normal eye. So I had to shoot everything in time lapse. And the whole time he's explaining this to Craig Nee Nelson, he's just got this look on his face like, "Yeah, okay, sure." And then opens up the door, and like the bed's spinning, the toys are like flying around the room. Hulk rides by on a horse. And then he's like, "Do you need your time lapse camera for that?"
Yes.
And then in the new one, they kind of do the same thing. This guy's making that speech, and he goes to sit down on a kid's chair, and the chair just flies and smashes up into the wall. And they're just like, "So, did you get that one on your time lapse?"
And that was kind of the other thing that, you know. I mean, the film came out 2015, so, but them trying to make it a reality TV type thing, you know, the way it was shot and the way it was alluded to, like, you know, "Oh, we've fallen on hard times, but imagine the millions we could make doing this as a reality show." And,
yeah,
you know,
like the scientist originally thinks this is like a scam, and they're like, "No, we just want the daughter." You know, so like that guy doesn't believe any of that shit until the chair goes flying across the room, and that went to, he goes to like hang a temperature sensor in the closet, and his arm gets sucked into the wall, and the drill starts going through the wall back at his face, and then he finally breaks free, and the wall is like undamaged, like it was all in his head.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about, you know, that I think the paranormal, I mean, that's, you know, that really plays at your human psyche, and there's no getting around that. I mean, you know, what did that really just happen? I mean, it has you questioning your own self, you know, much less if you were to try to explain that to somebody for help.
And in like the first one, it was one of the other scientists, like his face melts off at one point when he goes to get something to eat. And like I said, before like, you know, the real physical stuff, they're having all the like the little mind stuff. And they kind of recreated that scene with Sam Rockwell in the new one where he goes to get a shot of whiskey. Like in the first movie, the parents are like smoking weed in the bedroom, and they're like, yeah, they do that now. Like, I guess people have been outraged. So this time they're just drinking in the bedroom before the kid has the nightmare and comes get them. But he goes to drink some more whiskey and like pukes up worms and bugs. And all of a sudden he's got like bleeding out his eyes and worms and shit, or bugs are all coming out of his nose, which was, that's one thing about the new one. The effects in 82 still looked great, but they kind of updated the effects. And then the, drone and wireless camera technology. They fly a drone into the portal, so we see what it looks like in the ghost realm.
And that was, you know,
fucked up.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to see that aspect of things. You know, I mean, we really didn't get a whole lot of the portal experience in the first film. And then two, it was interesting. I don't know. I wonder if, you know, we had the 2015 release. I wonder if they try to do a remake of Poltergeist 2 and 3, because Poltergeist 2 and 3 in the 80s franchise, I mean, that's what set the stage for the tall man, Kane, and everything of that nature. And that's when you find out who the true protagonist really is.
You know, they allude to like him. There's a dark presence in there with her.
Yep.
That's kind of, you know, controlling all the
and the way they tried to one. You know, tie Kane's character in, I don't know, I kind of call bullshit on this, but you know, in the 1982 film, there's a scene that's focusing on a doorway, and you see a true monster's presence, you know, with like a skull and two arms and everything
blocking the door,
and you know, they're like, "Oh yeah, that was Kane in his ghost form, but in this, you know,
and even there's that big head that comes out of the portal when the mom goes in to grab the girl that, you know, tries to bite the dad. That was really weird. And the the psychic that's in the, I mean, we can't go without the little old lady that this house is clean. I mean, in the new one, now it's this kind of grisly old dude who's a reality TV ghost
hunter.
Well,
I mean, it would basically be like, you know, you have the ghost hunters from the Travel Channel, you know, one of their head guys, like, show up at somebody's house.
Yeah, and they're even, when they show, because, like, the daughter's, like, watching his show before all this happens, and it even says, hashtag, this house is clean. You know, they kind of, like, you know, just yes. tried to update the aesthetic of the paranormal investigator.
But I don't know, you know, once, you know, the little psychic lady,
And he kind of reminded me of the guy from, was it Quint, or from Jaws, where he's like showing all these like scars and stuff he has from like bad ghost encounters and telling them all the stories. It's kind of reminded me of that scene from Jaws.
I wonder if that's a little, you know, kickback to, you know, Spielberg and like...
Yeah. When they're comparing scars and stuff in Jaws.
Like, yeah, and it's funny too, you know, because the guy's got, you know, one particular scar that the kid asks about, and he's like, look, if we survive, you know, this encounter and everything, I'll tell you the story behind this scar.
He's got like a big chunk out of his leg from something, and his hand's jacked up from some other investigation. He's got all these like horror stories, but that scar on his eye, he's like, after everything's over, he's like, the kid's like, all right, what's the story? He's like, boom, operator fell asleep. He's like, so not a ghost? Nah, just an idiot with a very large microphone.
Yes. So, you know, that little story was interesting.
And I got to see the end of both movies, too. In the first one, like I said, they get the girl back. They think the house is clean. And it seems like a day or two goes by with nothing going on. So you see them, like, you know, they're packing up their trucks. Everyone's sleeping normal, thinks all is well. And then the monster tries to get them one last time. And then that's when, like, the bodies come out of the ground and we get that whole thing. Like, you moved the headstones, but you didn't move the bodies.
Yeah.
And like that whole last second, like, you know, bad shit happens to them. And when they finally get out of there, they go to the hotel and they just put the TV outside after the house is clean.
Which, and, you know, I want to talk a little bit too,
but in the second one, that transition happened so much quicker. I mean, they get
the girl back. Second one, but in the remake.
Yes, I'm talking about the remake. Yeah. The second version of the first one. As soon as they get the girl back, they're like, all right, we're out of here. They're getting in their car to leave. And the little girl's like, why do you say the house is clean? Like, well, we got rid of the ghost. She's like, no, we didn't. They never passed on. And then all of a sudden the car just flips and gets sucked back into the house. And like I said, it was, there was no breaks in the second one. I mean, it was just like, they went straight for the spooky shit and spooky shit all the way through.
Yeah. I mean, which, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, the originals still stand up and, you know, were actually a greater film, in my opinion.
Yeah, the slow parts make the horror parts that much more impactful.
I mean, it focuses in on the family and, you know, the things that the family are going through and their challenges and everything. I mean, you know, I could attribute that to, you know, me and my sister and my parents, and I could see ourselves all being in that same situation, having very similar dialogue. Now, my parents probably wouldn't be the type to be in their bedroom chiefing up or whatever, but, you know, we'll, but, you know, the teenage daughter, you know, I thought was funny, you know, yes. when they're talking about going to the hotel.
Yeah, there's all these little references like, that, like, she's secretly a slut. Like, you know, because, like, all the, like, she goes to leave and all the construction guys building the pool are, like, freaking catcalling her and stuff. And the mom, like, doesn't even, like a movie now, like, you know, the mom would be, like, had been all up in the nerd, but she's just kind of laughing and the daughter's just giving him the finger and stuff. Yeah. But then they're like, yeah, well, we're moving out of here. We're going to go stay at the hotel off of 75. She's like, oh, yeah, I know that hotel. He's like, how do you know that hotel? Nothing. And then when, like, the final bad shit happens, she's supposed to be, like, off on, like, having dinner with a friend. But some dude drops her off in a Camaro and, like, her clothes are all messed up and she has a giant hickey on her neck.
Which, I guess if you're going to make a grand appearance after, you know, a rendezvous or something of that nature, what better way to make sure that, you know, the family life isn't upside down just to avoid those questions?
Yeah, yeah. Your house is getting eaten by monsters. I think you're going to get away with, you know, dad's not going to ask questions that night.
Yeah, that's...
It might have been an awkward conversation over breakfast, but at that point, they're like, whatever, just get in the car, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yep. And so I thought that was kind of a funny moment. I mean, that was the thing, is, you know, when the horror sequences are going on and the scary shit's breaking loose, like... You know, it has you on the edge of your seat, but during those breaks, I mean, they do a very good job of, you know, having that comic relief. So yeah. It's, you know, you're on the edge of your seat, and then about the time you're relaxing, like, some other shit goes bad. And
there's, like, one scene, too, where it's kind of a quiet moment, and the mom decides to go take a shower or whatever, and it's while the daughter is still missing, and they're waiting on the ghost hunters or something like that, and she just comes out, and the house is all quiet. And she just tries opening the door to the daughter's room, and just blood curdling screams like come out of the room. She's like, shuts the door. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
Nope, did not mean to disturb. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I want to kind of jump into the second film a little bit, because that's when we really start seeing, you know, the backstory and learning more of actually what's occurring. I mean, we find out at the first one that they moved the tomb or the headstones, but left the bodies. And, you know, the whole time in the first one, you know, it's funny because they're like, oh yeah, this is not like it's, you know, sacred Indian burial ground or something of that nature.
They make that joke too.
And, you know, in the second one, you know, Taylor, one of the good spirits, you know, is there, and it is a Native American guy. And, you know, he's trying to,
I can't even remember the second ones. I haven't had a chance to rewatch them yet.
Yeah, anyway, he's basically the guy in charge of helping the family and, you know, basically going into telling the father, you know, hey, you've got to become a warrior. You know, the things that are keeping the spirits and the tall man at bay is, you know, your family and your guys' love for one another. If your
so are
family,
they in, like, a different house now? And
yeah, I mean, they've basically moved into the mom's house. They have moved into... her grandmother's house, and the grandmother's still alive and everything.
That's one thing that they kind of allude to in both films, that with poltergeists, and sometimes it's different from a normal haunting. It doesn't necessarily follow a location. It's more following a person or fixed in on a person. So they kind of allude to that in the original.
Yes, so that very much still holds true in the second film. And Carol Ann is doing some crazy ass demonic drawing and stuff like that, and you know, eventually, you know, it's alluded to in the first one that, you know, that the dad has lost his job and everything of that nature.
Yeah,
so
he quits at the end of it when he finds out, like, what the company was doing. He's like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
So basically, they didn't have money to go buy another house. So they move in with, you know, the mother-in-law and everything. And, you know, that's kind of where most of the story takes place. After the, you know, grandmother passes, then... they move on to, you know, kind of Taylor's house, and Taylor's doing, you know, some of his Native American rituals and stuff like that. And, you know, they realize that, hey, he's a good guy. In between then, you know, the tall man has, you know, tried to, you know.
I have seen the one scene where he's standing at the door, let me in.
Yeah. That happens pretty early on in the film. Kind of what alludes that is, you know, Carolyn, that she's out shopping with her mom and the brother, and the brother's like, oh, come on, can't we get a new TV? Like, at this point, like, they're not allowing any TVs in the house or anything. Yeah. So they're all, like, gathered around the radio listening to a ball game, and, you know, one of the players, you know, hits an RBI or something, and the dad's like, did you see that? No, Dad, it's a radio. I didn't see it. Can we get a TV like normal people? And he's like, no, you got to use your imagination. Like,
yeah, damn
visualize
right,
it. Yeah. So, I mean, it was awesome to see, you know, you eventually find out that, hey, it was in fact a burial ground, and, you know, the tall man is a spirit that has been keeping all the other spirits, you know, essentially following him, saying, hey, I'm the way out of this. This other guy is the bad guy keeping you guys trapped here. I want to help you. So, I mean, very manipulative. I mean, you see him try to manipulate Carol Ann. You try to see him, you know, manipulate the dad. And it's kind of funny. In the first one, you know, they're smoking weed and stuff. And the second one, the dad, you know, he's drinking a bottle of tequila, and the spirit possesses the worm inside the tequila, and he
really?
Ingests it.
And, oh, my God.
You know, basically... You know, he, you know, the father
didn't
walks.
Did Freddie do that at one point?
Very
I remember
similar.
Something with like a haunted tequila worm.
So, yeah, I mean, there was, that's what I thought was kind of crazy about this series is, you know, as I go back and, you know, remember Freddy Krueger and stuff like that, I'm like, man, this is where, you know, they got some of the great ideas, you know, for the Freddy franchise, I bet.
Oh, yeah, and one thing, too, about the remake, though, was the creepy-ass clown doll. I mean, the creepy-ass clown doll in the first movie was creepy. But the one in the second one, that thing, I would have emptied a clip in if I found that thing in my house. Especially, like, the first scene, the kid, like, very first night, he's sleeping alone in that room, and he starts hearing this music, and opens up this little closet and sees this ball dangling from a string, and he thinks, like, a light switch, and he pulls it, and all these freaking clown dolls just come falling out of the attic or something. I'm like, nope, I'm out.
Yeah. No, I would have unloaded quite a few shells. And they, you know, they think the clown's terrorizing, come to find out it's a damn squirrel.
Yeah, but later on when, like, the lights go out and, like, he keeps looking around and the clown dolls keep moving around the room and eventually, like, the string is between his legs and he follows the ball and looks down and doesn't see the clown and it's, like, standing on, like, a shelf behind him and just jumps on his back. And I was like, fuck that.
Yeah, dude, like, 80s toys were creepy as shit, yeah. Man. Like, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you know, I remember the scene.
Sitting in
like,
a chair at the foot of his bed staring at him. I'm like, no way. That thing, I would not sleep with that.
Well, I mean, it's funny because, you know, the first time he sees it, he throws a blanket or something.
Oh, no, a Chewbacca jacket.
Oh, yeah, he throws a Chewbacca jacket, and, you know, it lands over the clown. He's good. Later on, he tries to throw it again, and I don't remember if this was in the remake or if
it's not in the remake, but yeah,
or if
it misses,
it misses, yes.
And he's like, ah, fuck it, the ghosts are gone, I'm going to go to sleep. But then he wakes up and the clown's gone, and he starts looking all around, and finally, it's like in bed with him and starts and jumps on him and stuff.
So yeah, I mean, very, very creepy. I don't know which was. I think that was another weird difference is, you know, once they actually make the transition into the portal, you know, I think in the first one, it was the brother that goes in.
Yeah.
And
it's the mom in the first one. In the remake, the brother.
So
he feels guilty for leaving her alone.
Yeah, for
when
not
all the
being,
bad stuff happens,
you know, stronger and everything.
He goes to try to find the other sister or whatever, and then that's when she gets sucked into the closet.
Yep. But you know, in the first one, they come out and they're all covered in, you know, like ectoplasm or some kind of weird goo. And the second one, like, they come out like nothing ever happened. Like, you know, okay, here's some cold water in a bathtub. You're good to go.
That's the thing too. One of the scenes that, I loved in the first one was the pool. Like I said, they're digging a pool when all this stuff. So it's like I said, they haven't put concrete or anything, and it's just a big muddy hole in the ground. And the mom, like, falls in, and like all these bodies and stuff start popping up out of the mud. And in the second one, they didn't have the pool, but the thing they did was like a crack opens up in the garage, and like all this like black dirt and like, I don't know, looks like bloody dirt or something, like all oozes up into the garage, and skeleton stuff start coming up out of that dirt and attacking the sister, which it was kind of like that scene, but it was a little bit different. But yeah, those two scenes were probably the creepiest part of the movie to me, was like the bodies just popping up out of the
And, you know, I was just reading some facts about the movie, and, you know, it was alluded to sometime after the filming of that scene that real corpses were cheaper than to buy fake corpses at that time. So there is a rumor that, you know, both the mom and another person working on the set said that, yes, those were real corpses.
I don't know. There has been Hollywood stories where, you know, they found like a corpse that had been reused in like a lot of movies and stuff, and then somebody accidentally like snapped the arm off of it, and it turned out it was a real corpse. It wasn't the prop, that it was like somebody had been dug up and used by some special effects guy a long time ago, and it just got stuck in the prop department and had been showing up in all these movies, and no one knew it was a real body until somebody damaged it one day.
Yeah, I mean, so that was kind of an interesting tidbit. I mean, you know, the other, I don't know. I mean, it has been said that, you know, because of some of the deaths.
Yeah, there's always been a legend that the cast of the original Poltergeist was cursed because,
the teenage daughter
was murdered
by an ex-boyfriend.
The Caroline, I think, died like 6 years later.
Or at the age of 12 on a septic shock.
Like, there's a bunch of the cast members that past
the guy that
Violet
played the tall
mysterious
man,
ways, yeah.
Kane. I mean, he had been battling cancer for 18 months, so that one really isn't as, you know, coincidental. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely been some interesting theories and some abnormalities, you know, revolving the franchise. So yeah, I mean, just adds another little bit of that creepy nostalgia.
So what about the third one? Have you rewatched it recently?
I have not rewatched the third one.
The third one has something to do with like a high rise building or something from just what little I saw of it. But yeah, it's been forever since I've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, this one had Michael Gray, Mark Victor as the writers. Let's see here.
And that first movie was hugely successful too. I mean, they made it for $10 million. It made $121 million.
Yeah, I mean, in the third one,
successful.
It looks like Heather and Zelda, the little psychic lady, are the only original cast members who returned. I believe. Let's see here. Was it?
Yeah, because it's kind of gets ridiculous that family getting haunted.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Heather, she plays the little girl. She died 4 months before the third film was released and before post production could be completed. So the third film is a dedication to her memory.
Kind of off topic, but I just remembered with all the Force Awakens news. Have you heard the rumor that they're making a new Spaceballs now too? The Swartz Awakens.
I have not yet.
I haven't been able to confirm it, but it's a rumor floating around the internet. And if that happens, hell yeah. But any other ghostly movies that pops up in your head?
I mean, dude, there's a whole slew of them. Got the Amityville Horror.
Yeah, Amityville Horror movies. Those are another one that, I mean, and also based off of supposedly true events.
And that's kind of what I want to base this list off of, is films that, you know, have a history. I mean, and doing a lot of the research, I mean, you get a lot of your, you know, films that are based off of, you know, your serial killers, whether it be Dahmer or Ed Gein, those types of films. But, you know, as far as Paranormal Activity and stuff like that goes, I mean,
I've not watched any of the Paranormal Activity movies yet. And it's just that whole found footage stuff kind of got old after Blair Witch.
Yeah, I mean, Blair Witch was never really I couldn't appreciate that film. There were a lot of people that...
The reason why I liked Blair Witch, being another ghost movie, I saw it because they had... The marketing for that movie was genius. I mean, when it started off, it only played in certain theaters. There was whole websites dedicated to this is a true story. These people are really dead. I mean, so when that movie first came out, people literally believed that this was a movie made out of found footage. That these people, I mean, it's a whole shot documentary style. And until these people started showing up on like talk shows and stuff when the movie came out, there was a lot of people that like the first couple weeks that movie was out, people believed the internet stories that this was a real occurrence. And when I saw it, I mean, you go to a horror movie, there's people, you know, making noise, cheering, talking at the screen and shit. But when I saw it, like, opening night, the theater was dead silent. I mean, nobody said anything. I mean, you could barely hear munching of popcorn because everyone is just, like, on the edge of their seats going, this is fucked up. I mean, it didn't have the same effect when I saw it on video later. But, yeah, that first showing in the theater, it was just completely creepy.
Well, I mean, that's another thing, sort of off topic, I suppose, but... I mean, I think that was the marketing behind Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, the opening. This film is based on, you know, real events and blah, blah, blah. And so many people think there was literally a guy that, you know, yielded a chainsaw going around, you know, Texas murdering people and stuff.
Yeah, the original Amityville Horror came out in 79, was based off 1977 novel. But it was, you know... based on alleged true experiences of the Lutz family, which were real people who really bought a house that a horrible mass murder, supposedly the son killed his entire family and blamed it that he was like possessed or a demon made him do it. And supposedly like the people that moved in afterward, all this paranormal weird shit happened to him. And that's another one that kind of, you know, stuck around in people's minds for a very long time, and also got a remake back in 2005 with Mr. Deadpool Ryan Reynolds playing the playing the father. And that's one of the few reboots or remakes that I actually enjoyed. I mean, it was very, very creepy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And just his, like, when the family moves in, the dad kind of starts getting possessed and kind of becomes like the bad guy of the movie until they get everybody out of the house. And even especially in the remake too, just that it's that slow descent into madness where he's just like a, you know, normal happy guy at the start, and he just keeps getting darker and darker and darker until, you know, he starts trying to kill the family. I mean, that was just so like bizarre and creepy.
Yeah, I mean, another one, you know, just for local legend, 247 Degrees came out in 2011. And
I don't think I've heard of that one.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically your old cabin in the woods setup. You know, it's a very small, you know, horror film. But basically, you know, four friends head into a secluded cabin and get locked into a sauna. but, you know, the true story behind that is three friends actually spent 10 hours in a sauna in Georgia. And when their friend went to the... Basically, somebody, you know, went to the toilet, forgot to go back, not realizing the friends had all been locked in, but there were no deaths attributed to that. But, you know, if you could imagine being locked into a sauna for 10 hours, yeah. Probably.
I mean, I've been in one for like an hour and it sucked.
But, yeah.
another big ghost movie that's more modern, The Ring. That was another one that was creepy as shit the first time I watched it. I mean, you watch this tape and 7 days later you die.
Did you ever see Ringu, the Japanese version?
I've not seen the Japanese version, but I heard it's yeah, freaking...
To me, it's even more creepier than, you know, what the Ring is. But, yeah, I mean, still that same premise and everything.
Oh, I've got a good Ring story about what happened to me after watching that film. Used to, our local theater, they would do like midnight showings for the just employees of the theater, so they could see the movie before they came out, so they could talk about it if anybody, you know, asked for recommendations. And I saw, it might have been opening night, I saw The Ring, me and my buddy John, and it creeped us out so bad that we were like, they're doing like a midnight preview of Harry Potter for the employees, and we talked them into letting us stay with it because we knew all those guys. We were like, yeah, we got to stay and watch Harry Potter just to like calm ourselves down. So, don't leave the theater until I was probably two in the morning. And I lived like out in the middle of nowhere at the time. So I'm driving home and I hit a cow in the middle of farmland, totaled my car. And like I said, I'm in the middle of farmland. There's no houses for me to go knock on the door. So I had to walk home in the dark, like 2 or 3 miles down the road at 2 in the morning in the woods after seeing The Ring. I kept waiting for that little freaking girl to come out of the bushes at me or something the whole way home. It was like,
didn't come across any uncovered wells or anything?
No, but I did not watch any VHS tapes either.
Did you ever see the actual VHS movies? I think the series is on Netflix now, or the two films.
Oh, and I've heard about it, but it's like all like found footage horror type stuff. But I've heard people talk about it, but I've not seen it yet. If it's on Netflix, I may have to check it out.
Yeah. Another one that comes to mind is the Haunting in Connecticut. This was 2009, basically the story of a Campbell family moves into a new home to facilitate their son's ill health and discover it used to be a mortuary, and dead people who once rested there, you know, essentially come out to terrorize the new homeowners. But this is based on Alan Carmen Snedeker, who allegedly lived in a haunted funeral parlor in Connecticut, and basically, the paranormal activity and everything were so disturbing that the infamous paranormal researchers Ed and Lorraine Warren were brought into.
If you don't know who they are legitimate. I mean, they've wrote a bunch of books. I've read a couple of them about their experiences, but they call themselves demonologists, and you know, their specialty is not just your ghost hunting stuff, but they deal mainly with stuff they think are demonic possessions or demonic incidents. And yeah, some of their true stories from their books are just absolutely insane. And they even, because they investigated the Amityville Horror, and you know, they're featured in the movie, you know, characters playing Ed and Lorraine Warren. But yeah, those are some interesting people if you ever look up their stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, one, you know, type of film is, you know, you had the Exorcism of Emily Rose, but, you know, kind of along that, you know, I was talking to my grandma, and, you know, for some reason the topic of religion came up, and she was telling me a story that, you know, when she was a young girl that, you know, she, you know, got invited to go in or, you know, was, you know, visiting or something anyway, like got to witness a, you know, exorcism performed right there in front of her. And, you know, she was talking about, you know, the, you know, lady just, you know, laying on the bed and then all of a sudden, like all of her limbs just go, you know, straight up vertical and, you know, both of her shoes just fly off. Like, I mean, she didn't kick her legs or anything of that nature. Like,
so, yeah, I'd be like, I'm waiting in the car, I'm out.
Yeah, so, you know, I thought that was kind of creepy, especially coming from my grandma.
Yeah, another one, did you ever see American Haunting?
Yes.
I mean, that's based off the story of the Bell Witch, which nowadays, I believe the cabin and the cave there is around the Bell Witch legend. They actually do tours of that, and they even have an overnight tour where you can visit it at night, and that's something that we've kind of talked about doing, just haven't had the time yet. I want to go do that so bad, because that's probably one of the most famous hauntings in American history. The story of it is this: the Bell family, or it might not have been the Bell family, but they had a supposedly a poltergeist activity of this creature.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it alluded?
There's supposed to be the ghost of a witch keeps like assaulting this family, especially the dad, and has even like supposedly killed him because he ended up drinking something that turned out to be poison.
Yep.
That was in like a bottle, like a whiskey bottle or something. And it's actually documented, like, you know, in like the you know, historical documents, that this was a murder committed by a ghost. I mean, it's so famous that it was actually witnessed by an American president at the time. I believe it was Andrew Jackson, because he was from Tennessee.
Talk about my father that way.
Actually went to the house during all this stuff was going on and seen stuff happen. So it's in the National Register, his account of what he saw when he was visited these people. So, I mean, it's one of the most you know, famous, you know, American hauntings. And so that's what that movie is based off of, the story of the Bell Witch.
I mean, that's one story that you and I, when we talk about, you know, wanting to start dabbling back into that world of paranormal investigation, or just, you know, go to some creepy places. I mean, that's the one place that always, you know, comes up in topic, no matter, you know, what circle you're mentioning. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably one of the most infamous, you know, haunts that...
Yeah. And another movie that, in the more modern era of ghost films that creeped me out, was The Grudge. Another one based off a Japanese horror movie. But yeah, this basically, there's a horrible murder where this girl is cheating on her husband, and the husband snaps, kills her, kills the kid, and then ends up committing suicide. And this family moves into the house that this happened at. And basically, anytime anyone who enters this house is automatically cursed and will die. It had starred Sarah Michelle Gellar, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And the movie was so, because it's kind of told like out of order. There's like these time jumps that you don't really get is going on until like much later in the film. But the Japanese, because it takes place in Japan with an American exchange student. But yeah, this Japanese girl with this like long black hair covering her face, almost kind of like the Ring girl, is just super creepy. I mean, there's one part where there's this kind of like this black cloud just kind of comes out of the wall, and then two eyes open up. It's like all black, but these two like bright ass eyes, and it's freaking horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, another movie that comes to mind is, you know, kind of throwing back to the 1980s again, but The Entity.
Yeah, but then, I mean, still in The Grudge, if kids creep you out, there's a little creepy Japanese kid that's like, his soul is mixed with a cat because he was drowned in a bathtub with the family pet. So the kid like makes like these meowing sounds that are just absolutely creepy, seeing that coming out of it. And there's like one scene where the babysitter goes home and she's in this elevator that has like a glass front. And as she's going up in the elevator, you see the kid. And on every floor they pass, he's a little bit closer and a little bit closer. It's so freaking
weird. At some
point,
I'm going to have to hit that emergency stop button and get the hell out.
Because she doesn't see it. She's just kind of like playing with her phone or whatever. But yeah, as the audience, you see him getting closer and closer. And it is just like, oh, creepy as fuck.
Yes.
My friend, like, and there's this like, the phone will ring and then you'll get this like, sound coming out of the phone, which you find out later is a girl who's had her jaw ripped out. But my friend had a cat and he's like, dude, I'm going to go home. My cat's going to run out and it's going to, I'm going to pee myself because it looks just like the cat in the movie. So I called him that night. I forgot home watching. It was like, and he's like, fuck you. That's not funny. I just kept doing that to him for like a week.
I could definitely see you doing that. So yeah, I mean, there's a shitload of, you know, films. Kind of switching gears from the paranormal. I mean, you got films like, The Shining. You've got, films such as Deranged and others that are based on, you know, more serial killer-esque, Psycho. I mean,
but yeah, you just said it, the Stephen King movie.
Which one?
With Jack Nicholson.
The Shining.
Yes, right? The Shining. I mean, that's another one that's, you know, it's not based on true events, but it was inspired by true events. I mean, I believe it's the Stanley Hotel that Stephen King actually stayed in and seen all these, like, hauntings and stuff. And it's, you can still go there if that's the correct name of the hotel. I can't remember if that's the hotel from the movie or the real hotel because they use two different names. But, you know, he's seen all this crazy stuff in this hotel and it inspired him to write that movie.
Absolutely. I mean, so, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of, you know, poking around on the web. I mean, you know, even films, you know, going back to The Blob in 1958, you know, it's basically meteoric jelly is apparently a commonly found substance referred to as star jelly. And The Blob was inspired by an event in 1950 when Philadelphia cops discovered a massive glob of jelly. It dissolved when they tried to move it, which is, essentially it's better to have it dissolved than to be eaten by it. But I mean, still, you know, kind of creepy just in that aspect.
He slimed me, Ray.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, then, you know, we've got the straight up Exorcist movie, which was.
Yeah, not really ghosts, but, you know, possession or whatever, which I would say kind of falls in that same category. But yeah, that original Exorcist movie, I mean, it was, as a kid, that was hard to watch.
I mean, that's still one that, you know, I.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Yes, I mean, just some of the, sacrilegious stuff that goes on in that film. I mean, that's one that. You know, I can still talk to my aunt about to this day that, you know, she'll share all kinds of, you know, stories and stuff, too. And
yeah, because I remember at one point there was like a documentary on TV one time that tried to show an actual, it might have been an anniversary of The Exorcist, but they were showing like an actual exorcism that somebody filmed. And yeah, I couldn't sit through it. It was just too freaking creepy.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, that. I don't know, you know, like we talked about, you know, when it comes to the paranormal and stuff like that, you know, I mean, it's much more, you know, where the paranormal, whatever it is, you know, attaches itself to that person, regardless of the place and everything, you're not going to run from it.
Yeah. And that's one thing that, a lot of these, when you start looking into real ghost stories or real paranormal encounters, people talk about the shadow people. And it's usually associated with hauntings that are kind of got a negative or violent edge to them. But that's something they did, you know, in the first Poltergeist movie, they kind of talked about the being able to feel the girl's spirit moving around. But in the remake, they kind of added those shadow. There's a few shadow people incidents where you see like the shadow of somebody kind of running around. And I thought that was kind of cool that they brought that element into it. That you've seen in like, you know, these documented paranormal investigation cases.
Yeah, and I think there was a movie. Yeah, I mean, there was a movie that came out in 2012, you know, called Shadow People. And it was based on a viral video called Sleep Study, GR16, 1971. And basically based around cultural beliefs that shadow people are responsible for something like sudden unexplained nocturnal death syndrome.
Yeah.
So.
That too, and like, you know, there's a lot of talk about sleep paralysis and stuff that because your body actually kind of shuts down, you know, to keep you from acting out your dreams. Your body releases a chemical that basically paralyzes you while you're sleeping to keep you from, you know, acting out your dreams. And there are certain people that, you know, a lot of like these stories of demonic attack and stuff, they attribute to sleep paralysis where someone has woken up, but their body hasn't woken up yet, so they can't move, and their brain is imagining that there's some kind of entity holding them down and attacking them.
I mean, I would almost attribute
to sleep paralysis.
You know, we've talked a little bit about deprivation chambers and things of that nature. I mean, I would almost attribute it to, you know, something of that state.
Yeah,
you know,
like, when your brain lacks input, it tries to fill that void with, you know, whatever things it can imagine. And, you know, your brain always tries to explain the unexplained. And sometimes, you know, a ghost is just in your head because your brain is playing some kind of weird trick on you.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of spooky shit out there if, you know, you folks are like us and like to dive into that realm of things. I mean...
And, you know, like I said, we'll talk a little bit about real ghosts later on. We have an interview with an actual paranormal investigator from the Ghosts of Georgia Paranormal Investigation Group. So stay tuned for that later on. Any final thoughts on this cigar we're having, the Palina Red Label?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it definitely stayed, you know, medium body, a little bit of a milder smoke than what we traditionally. But, I mean, I like the creaminess. And, you know, one thing about the cigar is... You know, the smoke, you know, I mean, it produced such an awesome,
thick,
you know,
smoke. And, you know, for being the problem with mild cigars for me, at least, some of them are too mild where there's no flavor to it. It's like, you know, air. But this one definitely being a mild to medium smoke had a lot of body and a lot of flavor.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, is the flavor and the aroma of the cigar are two things I really enjoyed. And, you know, it was also...
The construction, too. I mean, it was very well built. I mean, I've had about a 2-inch ash before I finally, you know, went ahead and ashed because I was afraid I was going to be in mid-conversation and drop it on myself. But, yeah, it held together very well.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, man, it's definitely a cigar that I'll be revisiting again. So, I mean, it would be perfect for, you know, some of the afternoon get-togethers and stuff like that. You know, especially in the, I would say, the more warmer months when you probably don't want, you know, something full-bodied depending on what you're drinking. And, you know, you just want to have a nice, relaxing sit by the fire smoke. That's definitely one that I think I would choose.
All right. I guess that wraps us up. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
The zombie T-Rex is back, undis swag with that old school rap. Because it's Curtis Blow with that Nerdist flow, getting pterodactyl flag on the track. 4 records deep, 5 EPs, 1 mixtape, because you can't kill me. Poison when I spit it, Komodo dragon, yeah. Nerdcore royalty, kimono dragon. Sesco with daily and loquaciousness, no rapper ever born did a rhyme like this. MC Lars with the rhythmic alacrity, oratory skills causing mad catastrophe. The whole crew sick, like Kubrick, got your eyes wide shut for this apocalypse. Let's face it, I'm an awesome rapper, post-punk laptop velociraptor. No, I won't dumb it down for the mainstream fan, because the mainstream fan has lame taste, man. Yeah, I said it. And I'm flying over hurdles, keep it underground like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. See a funny thing happen on my way to the stage, waylaid by a stegosaurus sucking on my leg. When I made my escape, it was way too late. Got that T-virus strain all up in my veins, bringing pain like the Necronomicon. Iguana gone loose up at Comic-Con, tearing up your lawn like a Mothlodon. Pick up with your girl like I was Donkey Kong. Jurassic Park, this van in your city every time I rock a show. Cause the fans all bounce when I light up the room with that pyroclastic flow. Yo! No mercy, no surrender. Zombie T-virus, I'm killing it forever.
And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome to this week's Blowing Smoke segment. Here we've got Ed on the line with us, and he is from... go ahead, Ed. What was the name of the group again? I'm sorry.
Okay, it's Ghosts of Georgia Paranormal Investigations.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, you know, Halloween's coming around. We keep talking about the different spook houses and things. You know what? Let's bring, you know, the paranormal into a reality.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this episode we've been talking about, you know, fictional ghosts from movies and stuff, but we figure we should would give equal opportunity to the real ghosts out there.
Appreciate it.
Ed, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, your investigation group and, you know, some of your guys' experiences?
Yeah, sure. Well, right now we have like 6 members of our team from various fields of work. We have, you know, some that work as real estate agents, some, you know, as office managers. We have one that actually quit her job. She was assistant to a principal at a local school system, and she quit that, started her own business. So they come from all walks of life. I'm very fortunate to have the people that I have in the group. They're very dedicated to helping people. Our main goal is to do private residences, to be able to help people that are afraid to be in their own homes for whatever reason. And we'll go in and do an investigation, and hopefully we can let them know what is there, if anything is there. And we also like to offer alternative explanations to what they may be experiencing. A lot of times people get afraid of something, and once that ball gets rolling, it's hard to stop. So we come in, and we're able to come in with an open mind, do the investigation, look at different things that may be causing some noises or drafts that may be in the house they don't recognize, you know, or sometimes people's water come on and it's because of a bad washer in it, you know, old plumbing system. So we go in, try to offer them an explanation, make them feel comfortable in their own home. And if we do find any evidence of, you know, any spirits there, we'll tell them what we think it is and tell them how to take control of their home, offer advice. And if they want house cleansings, we don't do them personally, but we have a couple that will come out and cleanse their house and try to get rid of any spirits in there. We've been doing this. The group's been around for 8 years. And like I said, I'm very fortunate for the people I have because they're very dedicated. They come in there. They're very professional. We make sure that our client is happy with us before we come in. We do an interview and let them get comfortable before we come to their home. And everything's confidential. You know, nothing is about the client or their home is, you know, talked about anywhere except in the group. We keep it very private. We do get permission to post our report on our website to give people a chance to see how we investigate and if we find anything at people's home.
That was pretty cool. I was reading through several of those last night looking up, and they're very detailed. I mean, almost like, you know, reading a forensic investigation report. So y'all definitely cover all your bases on the very thorough.
What we try to be, we try to, you know, look at everything. And basically this is our website's not interactive. It's to educate people out there of, you know, what we may find, things that may be causing some of our clients' experiences that may not be paranormal. So they can read our reports. They could, you know, think about it. And in their home, if they're having problems, they could go and check these things out that we check. We also have some fun pictures of the group in there. We, any audio recordings of evidence, what's called EVPs, electronic voice phenomena, we'll post with the reports, and any videos or pictures that we take, we'll go ahead and post them too. Let people look at things that we capture on investigations.
Yeah, that's one thing. You know, people that are dealing with something that is either paranormal or not paranormal, you know, they may think that you're just going crazy, and having somebody come to their house saying, no, this is actually happening, or this is happening, but it's being caused by this other thing. You know, it just kind of gives people, you know, peace of mind. They're like, all right, I'm not imagining this. You know, someone else has seen these things that have been bugging me the last, you know.
Oh, exactly. I mean, that we get, you know, people get so relieved when we, you know, show them what's causing what they're experiencing. We don't say they're not experiencing it, but what is causing the experience? And when we you know, show them what's causing it, either paranormal or not, it's just like a big relief. We run into the problem that, like, you know, maybe one person in the house or two people are experiencing things and other people don't. So it's kind of like, oh, well, yeah, you're just imagining this stuff. So it's, you know, it's kind of a battle in between people in their own family. So it helps help settle those squabbles that they have. And, you know, it's really interesting. And when people are relieved, we see the smile on their face. And sometimes we record audio that the clients will recognize as their family members. And, you know, that's just, you know, that makes us happy too, because, you know, knowing that their family member is visiting with them and they get overjoyed with it. And it's just, you know, it's just an amazing feeling for us.
How did you originally get started in paranormal investigation?
Well, I was with the local fire department for 30 years and retired. And one day I just happened to notice that people actually did this kind of stuff, that there were instruments out there to take different readings. And I started checking into it. And basically, it's the same thing I did with the fire department. With the fire department, we go out and we investigate. We get calls, and a lot of times they're not exactly when we get there, we find out they're not exactly what we were told it was, so we have to do investigations. Plus, we go out and we investigate businesses, you know, for code violations and such. So investigating the paranormal is just a different subject, but you basically do the same thing. You go out, you investigate, you take everything into account and figure out what is going on. We're there to help people, which in the fire department was, you know, our main job, and which I really thoroughly enjoyed. It's a pleasure of mine and everybody in the groups to help people out. So it was basically in the same line of what I was doing. I was retired and didn't have another job at the time. So I said, well, let me try this. Give a hand at this and see what happens. And I've been doing it for over 10 years now.
No, that's definitely awesome. You know, as far as equipment and things like that, you know, if somebody is curious, what are some of the tools that you guys use, you know, to carry out an investigation? I mean, I'm sure some of it relies on your guys' knowledge and expertise, but are there, you know, little tricks and things that, you know, you can share with us, or, you know, is that, you know, proprietary information?
Well, no, it's you know, basically common knowledge. We got, basically use a lot of equipment that's used on these TV shows that everybody watches. We have what's called a DVR, a digital video recorder, and we set up stationary cameras, infrared cameras. And basically, they watch the parts of the building that we're not in at the time. So hopefully, if something happens in there, we can record it and, you know, review it later on, see what we have. We also use just regular audio recorders, nothing fancy. It's just a recorder you can go out and buy at the store, and we have good results with that. We also use thermometers, you know, to take the temperature in case there's any fluctuation in temperature during the investigation. We measure electromagnetic fields with different – we have an assortment of different meters for that to read the energy in the room. And a lot of times that's when a spirit shows up, then, you know, that fluctuates. It gets higher, and then if it's a high area of electromagnetic field, a lot of people are sensitive to it. And that could cause these feelings of fear of being watched, you know, physical manifestations of, you know, the hair on your arms, back and neck sticking up. So we look for high pockets of that. And also, the theory is spirits feed off the high electromagnetic field. So it's kind of a two-edged sword, you know, the spirit's there because of the high EMF, or are people experiencing things or think they're experiencing things because of high EMF. We also carry around digital cameras, like I said, audio recorders, our meters. Two of our team members, they have access to thermal cameras, which really come in great. Using on one investigation, we were doing a karate studio, and we were all just basically sitting around in the room on the mat, and one of the investigators said she was touched on the arm. And the investigator had thermal camera pointed at her, and you could see a different discoloration on the mat right next to her. Wow. And as he took the pictures of it, there's a kind of like a digital camera, a thermal camera. So he took pictures of it as it was moving away and dissipated. So, you know, that was really interesting. And, you know, basically our major tool, in which I really try to tell everybody to use, even our clients, is just common sense. You know, just because you know, there's a bump or a noise, just use your common sense. Try to figure out what it is. Go check it out.
I wish I had one of those infrared cameras back in the day. I did a little ghost hunt, but it was so long ago. We were using 35 millimeter camera, if that tells you how long. It was way before it went high tech. And we had a buddy who was wearing one of those old, like, puffy baseball jackets. And he was like, I'll believe in ghosts. And one reaches out and grabs me. And all of a sudden, he just froze. And you could see a perfect imprint, like someone was squeezing the arm of his jacket. And he didn't come out with us anymore after that.
Well, that's great. In fact, and talk about old school. We love old school methods of investigating, like, you know, putting down baby powder, see if it's, you know, if any imprints get in or if it's blown out of the way. We also use compasses. Compasses are a good electromagnetic field indicator because when the needle spins around away from north, then you know something's going on there. So, you know, we go old school too. It's fun. And
at least now with the digital cameras, you know if you've got something within, you know, you're right if you take a picture. But yeah, we had to wait 3 or 4 days for the development to come back to find out whether or not we had wasted a roll of film.
Plus, it gets really expensive. Yes. I take anywhere from 100 to 500 pictures on investigation, so I couldn't afford to do that with a film camera. But one thing we want to try out, we've been discussing it, is one of these, I forgot the name of them now, the Instamatic cameras, you know, where you get the picture, it comes right on out. Polaroid, yeah, that's what I'm trying to think of. And I'm sure you've heard the story, maybe not, about these two guys live in a house, and every time they take a Polaroid picture, they have what they call ghostwriting. There's a message on there. And other people have actually gotten images of ghosts or spirits, you know, and just, you know, on these Polaroid cameras where they can't get it on a digital camera. So, you know, we find that interesting. We're always looking for new ways to improve our investigation. Because basically, it's not for us, it's for our clients. We want to provide them with the best equipment and the best knowledge that we can.
No, that's truly awesome. I mean, hearing you describe it and the equipment and everything else, I mean, I can just imagine, you know, the enthusiasm, the, you know, drive behind, you know, actually going out on site. I don't know. I mean, it just, once again, appeals to me even more. It makes me really just want to, you know, kind of grab the bull by the horns and be like, you know what? I want to give this a shot.
if someone was wanting to get into ghost hunting, what's like some first steps you would recommend to him? Is there any kind of, I don't know, books you suggest reading, or like the first equipment someone should get if they're wanting to, you know, go out on their own and see if they can find something?
What we recommend for our when we get a new member is, you know, their own little ghost bag, I guess you could call it, is, you know, get a digital camera, nothing real expensive, but, you know, just a digital camera, audio recorder. Again, don't spend a lot of money, because if you find out this is not for you, then you don't want to waste all this money on equipment. You could go out and get electromagnetic field meters. A cell sensor costs around $30, and some Home Depot sell them. Harbor Freight, I think, used to carry them, or you could order them online. They're not that expensive. And go around and, you know, if you feel like it, just go around and take pictures, run your recorder, and take your electric magnetic field EMF meter with you and see if there's any fluctuations. But if somebody really wants to get serious about it, what I do is find a reliable team and see if they could join a team that could teach them how to investigate. Because basically you don't want to go out and start communicating with the other side and open doors up that, you know, you don't know what might come through. So we do take a lot of precaution as far as that goes. You don't want to just, you know, go out and into the universe and say, oh, I want to speak to anybody that's around. You never know who's going to show up. And a lot of times they'll attach themselves to the person. And so you have to be very careful. So I would recommend try to get a reliable group and join them, get them to teach you how to do it, and hopefully stay with them. Or if you want to branch off and start your own group, you'll know how to do it.
Yeah, if you go to Google and look up ghost hunters in Georgia or whatever your local area is, you're going to get a list of a lot of groups, and yeah, hopefully you'll find one that's, you know, close by to your locations.
Exactly. And we have we get membership applications, you know, weekly. And unfortunately, we're not taking any new members right now, but we do keep them on file. So if we do have an opening later on, we will give them a call and see if they still be interested. A lot of them found other groups. A lot of them just basically changed their mind. So, but yeah, we do keep their application on file, and it might be, you know, a year or two before we call them, but, you know, we'll get hold of them.
Yeah. You said you deal a lot with private residents. Anyone who's just, you know, wanting to go out on a Saturday night and see if they can see something spooky. Do you know of any, I don't know, public places, parks, something like that, that you would recommend that's, you know, has some, some good paranormal activity you've heard of?
Oh yeah, Savannah, St. Augustine, Charleston, you know, all those old towns. But you can go to cemeteries. Cemeteries are a good place to go out and really practice. To me, cemeteries are peaceful, and they're not, you know, why would a spirit want to stay in a cemetery where they're buried? Just kind of thinking. But occasionally you do, you know, pick up something at cemeteries. But it's a good way to go around, check your equipment, you know, make sure if the police show up, tell them, you know, make yourself visible and let them know that you're there just, you know, investigating. And it's just so much vandals in cemeteries anymore, which is a tragedy. But just go out, you know, and maybe walk the streets, go around some of these old buildings, like, downtown Buford's got a lot of them. Cummings has a lot of them. We're in Lawrenceville. Lawrenceville has a lot of nice buildings. Just go out, you know, on the street and take pictures. And as you're walking around, ask questions. A lot of our EVPs that we get on our audio is during while we're having a conversation. We could be talking about anything while we're setting up equipment or taking it down. And it's like the spirits just want to chip in their 2 cents worth in your conversation. So we get a lot of EVPs that way. So if you're out with a friend, just, you know, walking, you know, through a small town or a big town in Atlanta, and, you know, just, you know, pull your recorder out and let it run, and, you know, maybe you'll get something on it.
And a lot of your big cities now are, you know, or even small towns have, it's gotten so popular. There's like so many ghost shows on TV that there's a lot of haunt tours. And a lot, I know Buford has, I think Buford has one. I know there's Savannah has a couple. There's some in Roswell. I know Dahlonega has one. So, I mean, yeah, if you want to go check out some ghosts without actually diving into the realm of an investigation, that's, you know, one way to go check it out.
Yeah, well, see, Marietta has one too, but I've done a Roswell ghost tour a couple times, and I actually had a shadow person pass me while we were walking. I thought of somebody coming up behind me, and so I moved over on the sidewalk to let him pass, and turned around, there's nobody there, but there's a shadow on the street. So, yeah, I mean, this coming weekend on the 24th, we're going to be guests of the Dalton Ghost Tour up in Dalton, so anybody want to come out, please do. But, you know, we're going to take our, you know, our cameras, and we're going to take audio recorders, and during the tour we'll be taking pictures and you know, recording. So hopefully we'll get something on that.
Awesome. Any further questions, Brad?
I mean, I think I'm okay as far as the questions go. Ed, tell people how they can find you, you know, Facebook's website, you know, things of that nature.
Okay, well, we do have a Facebook page, the Ghost of Georgia Paranormal Investigations. And we have a website, and it's www.ghostsofgeorgia.com. And ghost is plural, and Georgia spelled out.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's time for Beer 30. So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm qualified to specify what we're drinking or not. I mean, I don't know if I'm supposed to be undead or what, but...
Give me the beer, Carl!
According to this, we're drinking the Walking Dead Blood Orange IPA from Terrapin.
Get back on the porch, Carl, and give me another beer.
I mean, I pretty much could, you know, see that happening. So, yeah, this being an IPA and not being a huge fan of IPAs, it's what I would expect out of an IPA. I don't know. I read the blood orange. I didn't realize it was blood orange pill.
Yeah, it's a little bit bitter, but I mean, I'm normally not an IPA drinker, but some of these fruity IPAs that Terrapin's been making lately, like the Vaporcot we had a few weeks ago, that was, I mean, it's the sweetness kind of, you know, negates the bitterness a little bit. So it's kind of sweet and savory, I guess.
I don't know. I will say I definitely dig the undead walking turtle that's on the label and stuff. I mean, I got to give it up to Terrapin, man. They put some of the badass artwork out there. Yeah. As far as the labels. But let's get into it. So this... the other thing that surprised me about this beer is the ABV. So it only clocks in at 6.7. You know, I'm thinking most IPAs are in the 9, 10, 11%. So I was a little bit surprised at, you know, how, you know, I would say less high gravity. I mean,
It's more. It's still, you know, more than like your standard beers, but yeah, it's seems kind of low for a for an IPA. But I mean, 73 IBUs. As they said, it's made with blood orange peel and a horrific amount of hops. So yeah, it's definitely a bitter bastard.
Yeah, I mean, this thing, you know, checks in with like 8 different hops. So, you know, it's definitely very drinkable. You know, this wouldn't be my everyday go-to. I mean, this is more of a novelty thing. You know, like I said, the artwork is absolutely cool. I like the little write-up that they did, you know, for the beer on the bottle and everything. You know, folks that are much more into IPAs, more so than myself, are probably really going to enjoy this beer.
Yeah, this bloodthirsty red IPA will have you prepared for the upcoming zombie apocalypse. The official beer of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, and I think they did partner with Robert Kirkman.
Yeah, because it's got the official Walking Dead, you know, logo.
So, yeah, I mean, I got to say, it's definitely, you know, unique. I'm glad we were able to get my hands on it. You know, I was doing a trip out of state, and I found it, you know, out of state, and it was surprisingly, it was kind of ironic walking into a liquor store and just seeing end caps of Atlanta beers and not being in the city of Atlanta. And I was like,
yeah, for there, I mean, that state, you know, this is import beer for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I'm going looking for something unique to that state, and I'm finding stuff that's unique to Atlanta. And I'm like, this did not work out at all.
Yeah, because I didn't even know about this, and then I saw it on Instagram. I think Battle and Brew was doing like a Walking Dead premiere party, and they had it. So I went to our local beer shop where I usually get most of our beers, and they're like, yeah, we had it, but it sold out like pretty quick. So yeah, I'm glad you found it elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm always curious to try new beers, regardless of the style or, you know, the pretense notions of going into it. I mean, you know, we definitely discovered, you know, like the Vapricot. I mean, I probably wouldn't have tried that beer any other time, you know, outside of that setting. So, you know, that turned me on to something new. This is probably not going to be my everyday go-to, but, you know, it's definitely something that I would like to keep on hand to share with, you know, some of my friends that are not only fans of The Walking Dead, but also, you know, enjoy the hoppiness that an IPA brings to the table.
That's something you get, especially with Terrapin. They tend to a lot, like, I mean, the Hop Executioner, I mean, most of their beers are really hoppy.
Well, I mean, you look at it, you know, as far as their, I would say, college-age marketing goes, dude, they are on point.
Especially,
you know,
where they're located. I mean, yeah, they're right there at UGA, so they definitely have the college IPA drinkers in mind.
And, you know, Sweetwater also does that, you know, kind of same thing, too, you know, with their, you know, more hippie-ish, you know, freedom-loving beer style that they have.
Yeah, and if nothing else, you should pick one up to put in your, you know, zombie Walking Dead collection. It'll look cool on a shelf, even if you don't drink it. So what are we rating this on the Untappd app?
I mean, for me, I'm probably at a probably 6, or no, I'm sorry, we got a 1 to 5 here. We're not on a scale of 10. Wow, like
we've been off too long, dude.
Yeah,
it's
I don't know. All this stuff is you know, starting to come back to me. I'm probably at a, you know, 3.5. That's just me, and that's just not being a huge fan of IPAs. And you know, I know what's supposed to go into an IPA, and you're looking for that big-bodied hoppiness. And, you know, for folks that are really, you know, enjoy that, this is the beer for you. It is not the beer for my palate.
Yeah, I think I'll round this one up to a 4. It's pretty good for an IPA, because, like I said, I like that little bit of citrusy orange peel flavor to it.
Absolutely. So, cool. Well,
and with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And we're back. It's time for some science. Ready to dust off the textbooks after our break and learn some new shit?
Yeah, I wasn't even sure what you were about to say there, but yeah.
I wasn't even sure what I was about to say there. Yeah, that's...
We're both a little rusty.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. If you're asking me if I'm ready to dust off the cobwebs and get my education on, then
it's what happens when I don't sleep for like 36 hours at a time.
How do you expect me to learn anything in these conditions?
I'm hallucinating and stuff. All right, since our last meeting, they've discovered water on Mars, man.
That's interesting. Yeah, I read, you know, and saw all the news breaking and everything else on this. I mean, I can't say I'm necessarily surprised. I mean, how much stuff on our very own planet has yet to be discovered? I mean, we're finding new species and all kinds of different things almost on a daily basis. So, you know, expand that to our solar system. I mean, there's so much that we don't know.
The thing that's kind of cool is like I said, we've never been able to really prove that there's water on Mars or anything beyond what's like maybe, you know, deep frozen underneath the ground stuff. But our Mars Reconnaissance Orbital spacecraft, who just, you know, circles Mars all the time, has been noticing these lines that appear during the summer months and then disappear in the winter around like the mountains and stuff. And, you know, they've always suspected that this is, you know, running water during the, you know, warm months when, you know, stuff's not frozen over. But now they've actually been able to prove it. They, you know, published a study where basically the rover or the reconnaissance thing can't zoom in enough on these little lines to actually see water. But they have a program, they developed a program that could actually look at individual pixels and detect different minerals and stuff through, and they found in these lines hydrated salts, which is a type of salt that only develops in the presence of water. So since that salt's there, there has to be running water there.
I mean, dude, this just opens up so many bad sci-fi opportunities. Like,
yeah, anyone who's watched Doctor Who,
Mars Shark Attack.
No, there's a Doctor Who episode during the Tenet years called Water of Mars, where the first Martian colony gets infected by this virus that lives in the water of Mars that they have, you know, accidentally polluted their drinking water with, and basically turns these people into soggy zombies and try to, you know, invade the Earth. So I'm just saying, you know, the doctor warned us not to fucking drink the water on Mars. It's kind of like going to Mexico. Don't drink the water. This could be, you know, this is the start of an alien invasion. That's all I'm saying.
Could be. I don't know. I'm curious to see. We'll see how that goes. How do you kill a soggy zombie?
Hair dryer,
yeah.
it's like a slug. You throw some salt on it, he dries up.
But they're already hydrogenized salt. I mean, damn.
I mean, the Doctor Who episode, they had to nuke them all. So, yeah, it's there was no survivors that episode. It was a bad episode. So, yeah, don't want to be the first one drinking water on Mars.
How will you know?
And in other space news, have you heard of the Kepler spacecraft?
Yes, I've heard of Kepler.
Well, what the Kepler does is stare off into space. And it's been looking at the constellation Cygnus for the last 4 years. And what it does is it's trying to detect planets around star systems. Yeah, basically what it does is it watches these stars 24 hours a day, 365 for the last, you know, 4 years. And when it sees the star dim, that means something is passing in front of it. And they, you know, keep track of these. And that's how they are discovering these planets in far off solar systems. And so far, the Kepler spacecraft
is kind of like space is winking at us.
Yeah, pretty much. But they've, you know, detected like around 100,000 1,000 planets so far around these 100,000 stars they're looking at. But one star in particular is kind of showing off some weird shit. I ain't saying it's aliens, but it could be aliens. Star KIC 8462852. They really got to come up with a better name than that, because I'm not going to remember that.
Sounds like a bad college pun. Somewhat hotter, younger, more luminous than our sun. Like,
but the thing is, they're seeing really dark spot, like more than just the little winks that we're getting from the other stars. For some reason, that star is getting, for the example they gave in the article was, if Jupiter, the biggest planet in our solar system, passed in front of the sun would only dim by 1%. They're getting like 15 to 22% brightness decreases in this star. So whatever is passing by is like really freaking big, for one.
Is it a death star?
It could be. Or Unicron. Two, if it was a planet orbiting a star, the increments that this stuff happens would be regular, like, you know, the Earth rotating around the sun. It'd be a pattern to it. But so far, there's no pattern to it. It's like random. They've not been able to get like a steady pattern out of this blinking that's occurring.
That's interesting. I'm curious to see what that yields.
Yeah, I mean, it could be some giant fucking Death Star out there that we don't know about. But right now, they have no explanation. Because some of the potential explanations they've spouted was that it could be asteroids hitting the sun or dust particles and stuff. But all these things would cause an increase. The blinking would still occur, but it would cause an increase.
Wouldn't it be like more scattered or something, though, if it was
that? But also, like, if things were actually hitting sun, there would be a flare up and it would increase its infrared output. But there's no increase in radiation. It's just brightness is dimming. So the stuff that would happen if something was actually burning up in the sun to cause this, they're not detecting. They're just detecting the loss of light, which is way bigger reaction than they're getting from these other planets. So whatever's out there is really freaking big. And they don't know if it's a planet because right now they can't
explain
it. It's
a black hole, man.
Could be aliens. Coming to drink the water on Mars.
I mean, after traveling, the galaxy, one would tend to be a bit thirsty, I would assume. So what do we got now?
Well, in robot news, or sort of robot news, scientist at Stanford University has published a paper in the Science Journal. They've come up with a plastic skin that actually can detect pressure and react much like regular human skin.
I think that's just another step closer to the impending robot doom.
Well, what this is going to be used
robotic
for is...
robotic humanoid transform.
We've seen a lot of like advancements in prosthetics and, you know, replacing limbs. I know we talked about earlier about a new way of controlling arms where it's just basically it controls your thoughts just like, you know, a normal... you know, you'd think to move your regular arm just the way you would... the same way you would operate this robotic arm. Well, the only problem with these prosthetic limbs is you're still not getting a sense of touch, you know, an actual feeling. And now we are actually closer to being able to replicate, you know, actual, you know, human touch. This fake skin actually can interact with the neurons in the brain and send signals just like regular skin would.
Interesting. I don't know. Like, this could open up a whole new era for the adult industry.
Damn it. How'd I know you were going to take it to...
We'll just leave it at that. I tried to make it as family-friendly as possible.
Intelligent fleshlights. No.
And you just take it to a whole nother level of extreme.
Oh, the Oculus Rift. Anyway, chief engineer...
in conjunction with the Oculus...
God. Anyway, the chief researcher on this project, Zin Bao, which I really hope we can find some scientists named like Steve or John or something, because I'm having a hard time pronouncing all these engineer names.
Why do really smart people have such complicated names to pronounce?
Yeah, so far, like I said, it's a super thin, flexible mesh material made with nanotubes. And basically how it works is...
What? Awesome.
Basically, how it works is when it detects changes in pressure, it emits an electric signal, which that electric signal is converted to light pulses, which through a new research method called optogenetics, they've engineered neurons that can receive these light signals and transmit them, you know, to the brain just like normal input from your regular nerves. So as this, like I said, technology increases, it's going to be, you know, people who are getting replacement limbs now, they're going to be more and more like your original parts. And so it's, like I said, opens up, you know, a lot of new technology to the
Yeah.
Rehabilitation market.
Yeah, who knows? You know, maybe we start 3D printing skin cells and things of that nature and, you know, give those cells the ability to touch. And, I mean, who knows? Maybe it's, you know, almost an artificial way that, say, you lose a limb or something of that nature and you get a fully functioning limb with touch and everything. I mean,
I said we're just one step closer to Ghost in the Shell, and I got to finally, like, you know, upgrade my body and get out of this fat meat suit and into, like, you know, freaking some, you know, badass Tony Stark shit. I want to be the next Jarvis.
Without the money, though, I don't think Tony would be near the badass. Like, you got to have the funding to back the badassdom up.
Oh. But speaking of Avengers, there is a guy who has built his own working Thor's hammer.
Yeah, I've read about this, and, you know, I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and there's a video we will attach to it. Basically, Alan Pan built this hammer using... It's a electromagnet from a microwave with four or six giant batteries in the head of the hammer. Well, the shaft of the handle of the hammer is basically it's a material that when you squeeze it, it connects an electric circuit and turns on the electromagnet. So he sets the hammer down on metal surfaces, manhole covers, whatever, and walks away, and people come up and try to pick it up, and they can't lift it because the electromagnetic is so powerful, it's stuck to the ground.
I mean, it's got a thumbprint sensor. Yeah, I mean,
so only someone who has, you know, knows its fingerprint is worthy to lift Thor's hammer. And the video is hilarious of so many people, like, you know, trying to lift this hammer, and then him come by and just pick it up like it ain't nothing, and then, you know, set it down, and people trying to pick it up. It's just like real life. Now, if he can get it to shoot lightning bolts, It would be you know, a full on.
I mean, that's electromagnet. We're probably not all that far away.
Wire up a stun gun to it. You'd be good to go.
It'd be an electrifying experience.
Oh God.
Yeah, I made a bad joke.
Oh,
that was family friendly.
And speaking of light pulses and stuff, in the future, your internet may come from your lights.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this a lot like fiber optic cable, minus the cable portion.
Yeah, basically, anybody who's tried to, like, you know, use their phone at Dragon Con knows that the Wi-Fi field gets way overcrowded. And
not even Wi-Fi, just the networks in general.
Yeah. Well, now that we've kind of gone away from the incandescent bulb and started using more LED lighting technology, LED can carry more signals than just your, you know, average light waves. Right now they're experimenting with something they called Li-Fi, which is light emitted internet, basically. So your lights in your house, in a public place, something like that, could actually transmit data by pulsing, and your devices, phones, your computers, and all that stuff can detect this pulsing and transmit data faster and without, like, the light spectrum is way bigger than the electromagnetic spectrum, so they can carry a lot more data, a lot more signals, and faster than you can with conventional, even Bluetooth technology. So, and these things would, it's not like we're going to be sitting there noticing, like, freaking strobe lights and shit. This stuff is going to be happening so fast that your eyes are not going to be able to detect a difference than the regular light bulb in your room, but your gadgets will all be able to connect, detect, and, yes, operate like they do now, but without, you know, crowded Wi-Fi signals.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. I'm curious. 35 quintillion. Wow. Bytes of information.
Holy That'd be crap. A hell of a data plan right yeah. there.
Man, I think that might top no million.
And with that, folks, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News, folks. We got
news.
fairly extensive lineup. I'm just going to go ahead and jump into it. So Legendary Pictures has officially announced Godzilla vs. King Kong, a brand new updated trilogy. And I got to say, I'm super stoked for this. I mean, I had the original King Kong vs. Godzilla on VHS and stuff like that from back in the day. And I remember being, you know, 7, 8 year old, just loving these movies. I mean,
yeah, the new Godzilla movie that came out, you know, last year, that was a good movie. I mean, it's been
you know, one of the first Godzilla films that I felt like did justice. I mean, Godzilla 2000. I don't know if it was just the P. Diddy intro that ruined it for me, or
it had a good soundtrack. But yeah, that didn't even look like Godzilla, like a freaking giant gecko.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I just want to take it old school, man. I've seen some really awesome animatronic, you know, costumes and stuff like that of velociraptors. So I think we're away from the days of the green guys in big rubber suits.
Yeah, I mean, I think even though it was not a big guy, you know, guy in a green rubber suit, it had that same look to it. I mean, it looked if that was real, but they didn't change up his design. It looked like freaking Godzilla. You knew exactly what it was when you saw him.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If they can do that with King Kong and make it not look cheesy, that's going to be a pretty good accomplishment.
Well, I think one of the exciting things is you know, the developed King Kong reboot. It's going to be Kong Skull Island. Is set to be released on March 10th, 2017. So that's a pretty sweet birthday present, in my opinion. and then Godzilla 2 is going to return with the original team of director Gareth Edwards.
Did they say what kind of monster we're going to get? Are we going to get Mechagodzilla or Mothra?
It does not allude to that here. It does say that, you know, it's worth noting that Legendary will also be doing a uniting Godzilla, King Kong, and other iconic monsters. So
we might get King of Monsters. That would be a badass remake where Godzilla just fought pretty much everybody.
I don't know. I would be curious.
It was like the Mortal Kombat of monster movies.
You know, I would be curious to see if we get an updated Jet Jaguar out of this. I think that would be pretty sweet, you know, just to throw a little jab there at the Marvel.
Whatever, Ultraman.
Absolutely. So Godzilla 2, you know, would be set for June 8th of 2018. And then finally, Godzilla vs. King Kong is slated to hit theaters in 2020. So we just got to stick around for that, dude. So we all know that, just switching gears here, Fantastic Four absolutely bombed and was a shit poor performance. Like, even Fox's producers are like, this is not the film we were intended to make. They don't even want to take credit for it. Well, you assholes did it, and you butchered it.
No one wants to, like, be blamed for that shit.
So, you know, it is now, there's rumors circulating that Fantastic Four is now back with Marvel, and they are planning on a 2020 release, although Marvel's kind of...
Yeah, Marvel and Fox both has denied it, but they denied the whole Spider-Man coming back to the MCU thing until it was an actual thing, yep. So we can't tell if this is just bullshit rumor or it may pan out at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I mean... Maybe, you know, what Fantastic Four needs is maybe a Marvel Netflix team up, you know, and
yeah, it could make a definite, you know, cool Netflix series. And you know, a lot of that Guardian of the Galaxy stuff, originally tied in with the Fantastic Four, you know, a lot of the Galactic Marvel universe. And, they've announced, you know, some changes to the Marvel release date, and we've got a release date for 3 Marvel Phase 4 films that have not had a title announced yet. We've got release dates, but no titles. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe one of those is going to be a Fantastic Four slot.
Yeah. I mean, I would be curious. I mean, I've always felt like Fantastic Four, there's an opportunity there if folks can do it correctly. And unfortunately, I just haven't seen it done correctly.
Yeah. I mean, X-Men got better. I mean, the last couple X-Men movies were kind of out there, but they've kind of gone back and corrected some of the mistakes.
They found their origins.
Yeah. Like I said, it's gotten better since they started doing the second standalone Wolverine movie and the X-Men origin stuff. And even the new Apocalypse movies looks like it might be pretty good. But yeah, no one has yet to make a good Fantastic Four. Even the original two we got were I mean, they weren't bad, but they weren't, like, great either.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I kind of attribute it almost like the Hulk franchise, right? I mean, we've seen some very bad Hulk films, and, you know, up until we started getting Avengers and stuff like that, you know, then Hulk started turning around. Like, I think now if they were to do, you know, a film based around Hulk, there's enough of a fan base and following that they could probably do it right and not make it as emo as they did the...
Well, they've kind of announced now that, if you're getting into Marvel stuff, that Hulk is going to be in Thor Ragnarok. And he's supposed to be have a big part in that. It's almost going to be like a buddy cop movie with, like, Thor and the Hulk.
So, all right, speaking of Thor, like, I read an interesting thing today, right? So... You know, we know that Disney now owns, you know, Marvel essentially, or, you know, has the rights to Thor.
Oh, that they're the female Thor?
So is, you know, Thor now a Disney princess?
Well, in the comics, it's you know, Thor is now female. So, you know, it technically, yes. Also, Princess Leia is a Disney princess now.
So I just thought that was kind of interesting. I was like, you know what? That's an interesting play on it.
But yeah, they keep the problem with Hulk getting a solo movie is the rights to him is kind of weird. Like, Marvel can use the Hulk if it's a group movie, but if they do a solo film, I believe Universal or whoever did that original Hulk movie way back when still has the rights. So they would have to give them a big chunk of money if they did a solo film because they have the distribution rights to a solo Hulk movie. But I mean, if he's they're doing the Thor and Hulk, you know, we could get it's always been rumored, a Planet Hulk movie, you know, and that would be something kind of cool for Phase 4 of, you know, as the Avengers stuff kind of wraps up.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see, you know, a little bit of a darker, grittier, you know, more adult film version of Hulk, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
the way they've used him so far, I've enjoyed, you know, what, you know, his small parts in the other movies, but yeah, the standalone movies haven't been like huge, but with Mark Ruffalo and what they've been doing with Hulk lately, I mean, it could probably stand on its own.
Absolutely. Speaking of films that are going to stand on their own, you know, Jessica Jones. So, you know, New York Comic Con, you know, the first episode was kind of debuted there, but now we've got the full length trailer that's also been released. And I got to say, man, this pairing of Marvel and Netflix, this is going to be a binge watching frenzy.
Yeah, like, and it comes out November 20th, and this is definitely the darker edge of the Marvel universe. I mean, dying right and left on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I mean, this has got just, I mean, it's some dark
shit.
Yeah,
well, I mean, I was talking to folks about Daredevil, and they're like, oh, I don't know. And I said, you know what? Watch it. I guarantee you, you won't stop. And, you know, the biggest complaint I got was, holy crap, it grabbed me by the seams of my pants, and I was forced to binge watch it, and I couldn't stop because autoplay was already into the next episode.
Oh, yeah, when I first watched it, I was, like, through half of the season, like, the first night. I didn't get any sleep that first night. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to watch 2 or 3 episodes before I go to bed. No, I'm, like, halfway through it, and I'm like, ah, damn it. I'm not sleeping tonight.
Yeah, I'm also, you know, really curious. You know, we know that David Tennant's going to be the villain in this film, and I'm really curious to see Tennant as a villain.
Yeah, and just from the trailers, I mean, he looks like a creepy bastard. I mean, you don't see a lot of him face. It's mostly like voiceover stuff and showing people that he is mind controlling. But yeah, he.
I mean, you know, Tennant was probably my favorite, you know, of the Doctors. So, you know, seeing him go, you know, what I've envisioned from Doctor Who now, you know, to Jessica Jones and knowing some of the background story and stuff of her character, like you said, it's certainly dark. But that was the other thing. Like, looking at this trailer, New York looks like New York. I mean, you know, it's not shot in that same level of darkness and everything that Daredevil was. You know, Daredevil had that sort of a gritty aspect of things, whereas this, I mean, it feels like I'm, you know, right there in New York City.
Just stay the fuck out of Hell's Kitchen. I mean, there's shit happening there all the time. And also in recently announced Marvel news.
Unless you got a Punisher on your side.
Yeah. They're releasing it's been announced that Ant-Man is getting a sequel, and it's going to be called Ant-Man and the Wasp. So we'll get to see the Wasp in the next
version of Ant-Man. Awesome. I am really slacking because I've yet to still see Ant-Man. I'm so,
it was good.
And that's the thing, man. Is so many people have you know, told me that I'm missing out, and it's just been, you know, one of those things. So I'm just gonna have to wait on the DVD to make it to shelves, and I'll get an opportunity.
Yeah,
to
I need
check
to
it out.
I need to update my Blu-ray collection and get all the Marvel movies together. I got some holes in my collection right now. So
I mean, dude, between the Marvel movies and
007, coming up on Thanksgiving, so when the Black Friday DVD sales happen, I'm gonna have to complete my Marvel collection before Captain America comes out.
And I still want to get a remastered version of Star Wars too, because I've yet to get that box set.
Hey, it's gone down in price. It's only $89 now.
Oh, sweet!
And they've re-released it with a Darth Vader cover, because when it first came out, it was a Yoda on the cover, I think.
Yeah.
Yoda or Anakin one, I can't remember. But yeah, I saw it Best Buy. They've re-released the Blu-ray box set for the holidays, and it's got a Vader cover now. It looks pretty sweet.
That's absolutely awesome. Yeah, I want to. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to just see if get my hands on just the cover artwork and just start collecting. Just have some of that for my own, you know, personal collection. But you know, we spoke a lot about Hulk just a few minutes ago. Did you freaking see the dude that designed the Hulkbuster armor for New York?
Yeah, that was insane. I'm like, I don't know how you could fit down the hallway in that, because it is like looks full size. I mean, it's gigantic.
Yeah, I mean, this thing stands 9.5 feet tall. You know, took 1,600 man hours to make, and you know, apparently this guy's been, you know, world renowned with some of his costumes. Like, he basically tries to do, you know, the larger than life costumes and just pulls it off to a T. Like, I'd love to have this guy's skill set and everything that goes into it. But, yeah, we'll definitely have to link to a, you know, freaking picture of it or something, or maybe even the video. I mean, dude, you know, most people talk about the hundreds of hours that they put into their costume and the couple thousand, but this dude's like, no, I'm just going to go all out. So I'm going to drop $60,000.
Holy
on
crap. Yeah. I hadn't seen that figure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I can't afford that. I can't even afford to build a decent steampunk outfit.
Yeah. I mean, it basically says that the suit weighs 88 pounds and takes up to full 20 minutes to put on. And according to a Morph costume interview, the suit is valued at $60,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
But also, since we've been off the air for a couple of weeks, the fall nerd TV season has started up. Arrow, Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Gotham have all returned. Have you been able to catch any of the new stuff?
I've caught a little bit of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, really what I've caught was we had the you know, finale to Fear the Walking Dead and the premiere of The Walking Dead, and, you know, Walking Dead has sucked me back in.
Yeah, that first episode of The Walking Dead with the pit of zombies, I mean, that was just epic. That's like the biggest thing
I've
seen
so far. I'm just thinking here
at
home, there's a rock quarry, you know, just 2 or 3 miles up the street, and I'm like, damn it, I could just imagine, like, driving by that, looking down inside and being like, imagine if that was all zombies.
Yeah, and the effects, too, when that one zombie is squeezing between the trucks they've got lined up for, like, barricades, and it's just peeling his flesh off as he squeezes through. I'm like, that is just amazing makeup
Greg,
effects.
Greg Nicotero at his finest, yeah. Man. I mean, that's the special effects and stuff. I mean, I think that was one reason that Fear the Walking Dead, you know, was a little bit harder for me to get into. I mean, I will admit, as a season,
yeah, for everybody who was like, where the fuck are all the zombies? We found them. They're in a rock quarry in, yeah. On the East Coast.
I mean, that was the thing about Fear of the Walking Dead. I mean, it was kind of weird, you know, knowing more about the situation than the characters and everything of that nature. But, you know, as, you know, the story progressed and everything, I did start to, you know, get into the show. So I'm curious to see what happens, you know, with that now. But yeah, I mean, Walking Dead just came and, you know, no, we're going to go at it full force. This is yeah. What our fans expect. And, you know, they haven't let off the adrenaline.
And just to kind of walk through the other stuff, you know, Agent Shield has returned. We finally get to see Daisy now, as it's no longer Sky, as, you know, in her like full inhuman and style. And she's like, you know, kicking ass in that first episode.
Oh yeah.
Throwing freaking cars at people and shit. And we've also got a new, I don't know if she's a bad guy, but she's kind of like the reverse Coulson, the head of some secret government organization, I think it's the ATC. And she's cool as hell, too. I can't remember what her name is, but her and Coulson kind of just arguing while flirting. I mean, those two are, like, just going back and forth at each other. I'm like, Coulson's, yeah,
there's
like,
some,
pimping.
There's some definite sexual tension going,
yeah,
on between,
I mean,
those
she even
two.
Shows up in, like, a hot rod when they go to have, like, a meetup at one point, and I'm like, yeah, Coulson's in love. It's...
yes. Everything that guy could dream for.
But it's you definitely see that it's playing toward, you know, a tie-in with Civil War. And now that there's kind of, like, two... There's S.H.I.E.L.D. and the ATC. One of them's trying to help the Inhumans. One of them's trying to, like, capture them all. I mean, you see how this is definitely going to run into Civil War when that hits.
Yep, absolutely.
And then Arrow has also returned, and now he is announced that he is the Green Arrow. So he's finally, you know, going by the name in the comic books. Yep.
Yeah, he's got that new identity, and the new suit is just absolutely freaking awesome.
And the new bad guy this season, Damian Darhk, which I can't remember the actor's name, but he always plays an awesome bad guy and stuff because he's just, he's so freaking, he can threaten you and be charming at the same time. You can't, yes, help but like the guy. Like, he's going to fucking kill you, but you'll be like, you know, you would shake his hand and have a beer with him if you before he killed
like,
you if
look,
you met him.
I know you're going to kill me, but I'm still going to have a certain level of respect about it, you know?
And also you can see how they're kind of playing into that. We know in the, probably during the spring break, or like, you know, the winter break, we're going to get the Legends Tomorrow series, and you can kind of see how they're setting that stuff up. With all, you know, recently they you know, brought the original Black Canary back to life and stuff. So, you know, she's already been announced for the new series. So they're kind of like setting up all the blocks for the journey.
Yeah, her
to
character
the,
really grew on me too.
And then, we've also got Flash is back, and they're introducing the whole Earth 2 alternate universe stuff this season, and we've got to see Jay Garrick, you know, one of the Flash of Earth 2, and the episode, I think it was like the second episode of the season they've played so far, they even kind of recreate that iconic cover of the Flash and Jay Garrick both running to save, like, the same girl, and they're kind of... There's a building that's kind of splitting them, and you see them all each coming up. They did that too, where there's like a column, and they both run to the same girl, and it's like just completely recreated that cover, which was really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot. I don't know, man. I just got to find the time in the DVR space.
Yeah. And Gotham as well. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of Gotham when it started, but it's kind of grown on me. And in this season, they've kind of upped it with the bringing in all these villains and stuff. And I mean, it's just been a high body count so far on, yeah, Gotham. It's getting pretty badass.
Since we're, you know, this episode's going to be so close to Halloween, you know, another series that's kind of captivated my attention on a, you know, not so nerdy note has been American Horror Story. Like,
yeah, I haven't watched any of that. You know, everybody says it's good.
You know, been watching some of it, and, you know, I've caught an episode here or there, and, you know, it's dark, it's demonic, it's, you know, absolutely creepy. So it's, you know, something that, you know, kind of spikes my attention. And
also, Supergirl will start tomorrow as we're recording this, but it'll be out by the time this podcast goes up. So check that out. Yeah, add that to your Nerd TV list. So any final thoughts this week?
No, just needing more time and more DVR space and, you know, just to sit down in front of the idiot box and, you know, watch the creators of, you know, both DC, Marvel, everybody else. I mean, just there's just so many good shows now that it's not like just one or two. So, you know, now I have to pretty much plan my entire week around television yeah. shows.
Oh, I got such a DVR backlog. Oh, and one thing we did while we were on break is we happened to go see MC Lars in concert, and... That was cool because
yeah,
was,
we got a special treat.
Whole lot of guests that we but were not announced at the time. That I mean, his opening acts were Tribe One, Megaran, Sky Blue, and
IQ.
IQ. And so it was like a whole night of nerd raps. And once again, his new album comes out I think November 6th. So go pick that up, and we'll drop a track somewhere in here off the new album since we got it early since we went to the show. And with that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. Like, subscribe, rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Buy a cool shirt over at Real Men Smoke Cigars /CigarNerds. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CigarNerdPod. go to our Facebook page, like us, leave a comment, all that good stuff. And with this,
this podcast is clean.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.